Danger. The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Cake and grief counseling will be available at the conclusion of the test.
She's alive! Alive!
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Why not just put a stake through her heart?
She's not a vampire.
Oh, you'd be surprised how many things that'll kill.
We are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution. At last, we can retire and give up this life of crime.
You and your training wheels.
Hailing frequencies are open.
Hello, sweetie.
Commencing countdown. T-5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Vanity Show.
To the untrained eye, it's a Kevin Costner vanity project, but for the next 100 minutes, it's Skiffy and Fanti Torch of Cinema Waterworld.
Yay, I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
I'm Paul.
I'm Jen.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jeffrey.
And we do have a special guest today, which is Jeffrey Pelton, and we'll hear more about him in a little bit, but because we have a lot of people on this episode, we're going to try to be a little quick. So we're talking about a special movie, but first, what are we all drinking? And so we'll start with you, Julia. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking Pure Hydro.
Excellent. Rachel?
I'm drinking Five Lizard Latin-style Witbier, which is really, really good, and my friend from Chicago brought it to me because it's a local microbrew for her.
Excellent. Paul?
Pure Hydro.
Of course. Jeffrey?
Harpoon Oktoberfest. The can is blue, and harpoons go in the water. So.
Yay! Themes, I love it. Jen?
I'm drinking Angry Orchard apple cider, and I'm disappointed nobody's just said recycled piss, because...
Yeah, because nobody actually drinks that, Jen. And I
just astronauts.
Just astronauts, yes. I am drinking a Diet Pepsi with a very large dash of Kraken rum.
Nice.
Which is also theme specific. So, if it's not clear, we are talking about the movie Waterworld, which is from Jen's childhood, although Jen was 40 when this movie came out, so that's not entirely true.
Not true.
You're a vampire, Jen. We know it.
Okay, fine. You ready for the plot?
I'm ready for the plot. Give it to us.
So, Waterworld. Ice caps melt. Hundreds of years. People have gills. Well, only one of them. The rest of them don't. Bad guys, good guys. Girl with tattoo. Headed to dry land. That's the story.
You know,
basically,
it doesn't sound like you actually like this movie.
I love this movie, but I'm also sick, so I can't think coherently. And as all of you are sure to point out over the course of this podcast, there's not much narrative sense to this film anyway.
There's not. But maybe we should save that for our rounds of likes and dislikes. So because we have 6 people on this podcast, we've decided to narrow it down to just 2 rounds, just so we can actually talk about the movie. So we're just going to dive right in to likes, and we'll go with you, Julia, first.
Okay, my first like of this movie is that there's a point where Kevin Costner is, like, telling the little girl not to use his crayons, and he gets really angry at her. And then later, his crayons are left out, and one of my friends right before this actually happened was like, oh no, now they're all going to be melted. And the next thing Kevin Costner said was, they're all melted, no! So that made me laugh.
he takes his crayons super serious, yo. For sure. Rachel?
Yeah, Kevin Costner is basically the personification of Grumpy Cat throughout this entire movie. It's great.
I can't even disagree with that. It's so true.
Because it's true. It's true. All right, fair enough. All right, well, we'll jump to you, Rachel. Your first like.
Okay, since we have so little time, I'll just jump into the best like ever, which is the music. I love the score for this, and it has a special place in my heart because... I was part of the North Glen High School Marching Band in 1996, and we did a marching band show with this music, and it was fucking amazing, and we did costumes, and we had our drumline pounding on plastic barrels, and it was really cool.
And we're going to link to that in the show notes.
Yes.
Not just linked to it, it will be a video. It'll be a video.
Even better.
Even better. And we will give $5 imaginary to anyone who can find Rachel. So, but don't tell them what you looked like back then, Rachel. Like, what instrument you played. Shh.
I won't tell.
Fair enough. All right, Paul, what about you?
My first like is Kevin Costner's Trimaran. It's a pretty sweet ship. I mean, I couldn't buy most of the technology in this movie, but I could buy Kevin Costner sailing the high seas in that ship. And if I was going to be stuck on a planet that's mostly just water, that's not a bad ship to be stuck on because Dennis Hopper burns it, it's a pretty sturdy and useful ship, and I like it a lot.
So was anyone else super excited when he brought up the sail for the first time and it was all like mechanical and cool?
There's so much squee going on at that moment. It's not even funny.
It was super cool, I thought. It felt like that was one of the few moments where I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then gets increasingly worse from there. But, you know, it starts.
He's got harpoon guns. He's got net defenses. He's got all sorts of things tricked out on this. It's like the Bat Trimaran.
Except it can't lean itself. He has to do that.
Actually, this is a Trimaran. It's not a catamaran.
Right, that's why I said Trimaran. Right.
Fair enough.
I was correcting Jeffrey.
No, I said Batamaran.
Oh, Batamaran.
Batamaran.
Which is even cooler than what anyone else said. And that's probably what he would call it, yeah.
I like that.
Fair enough. All right, what about you, Jeffrey?
Well, I'll cede my time to Kevin for a recording. Like, the subtlety of the world building. For example, we are told the melting ice caps are responsible for this flood. But there's not enough water in the ice caps to do this. Where did the water come from? Obviously from space. Pre-deluge, Earthers had the capacity to make use of extraterrestrial resources, so they were mining ice from the asteroids. Why did they bring the water to Earth? I don't know. Maybe the fresh water was ruined. Maybe they were trying to get the climate under control. It didn't work out the way they wanted. But see, that's how this movie works. It doesn't show. Instead of show, don't tell, they went with don't even really show. Very subtle.
Yeah, we should probably explain who Kevin is, because no one's actually mentioned.
But you should... I think maybe Jeffrey should explain who Kevin is, since he talks about you constantly.
Yeah, Kevin is a conspiracy theorist whose podcast I have the honor of editing and publishing. He has ideas about conspiracies.
Sometimes he's right.
I think he's right about this one. I think he's on to something with the whole water mining asteroids bit. Makes sense to me.
Should we talk about that really quick? The fact that it's a world covered and mostly covered in water?
We all know it's absurd, and we'll get to it in a minute.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, well, thank you for that. Well, Jen, what about you?
I love the fact that this is one giant water movie. There, now we can get to it.
Well, no,
obviously, it's completely absurd. There's not enough water in the freaking ice caps. We know that. Even my town wouldn't be covered in water, and I'm only at like 289 feet. So the fact that he even goes down to the bottom and it's this like 100-story buildings that are totally covered, so ridiculous. But it's so audacious. So that's specifically what I like. I like the fact that this film is completely and utterly audacious in what it was trying to do. A, it was one of the first films that tried to show the repercussions of global warming, which was kind of awesome. B, water, which just is a cool setting for anything. And I don't know if you guys remember the old films that had the woman who did synchronized swimming, but those were amazing movies. And this is like following on those footsteps. And see, it's a really nice alternative to the dry world of Mad Max. So, and it leads to all kinds of cool things in the film, which I will talk about later.
I'm sorry, but did you just compare this movie to Mad Max Fury Road?
She did.
Not Mad Max Fury Road. I said Mad Max.
Oh.
I was very specific in just saying Mad Max.
Get off of this podcast.
Still not a good comparison.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
it's an excellent comparison, but we'll talk about that later.
Just go. That's just not
Moving
right.
Moving on. Next person.
Well, that would be me, Jen.
Go ahead.
So, you said that I was not allowed to do the Water Guild, so I'm not going to. I would just mention.
Come on.
No, I'm not going to do that because that's just silly. I'm going to be serious for a moment, Jen, and for your sake, because you're my like friend, and I care about your soul.
Okay.
I will just say that though his character is utterly absurd and ridiculous, I think Dennis Hopper was the greatest villainous character actor of the 1990s.
Yes.
Yeah, I had him as a like too.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Like the scene where he my favorite scene is when he's trying to convince the kid to smoke.
I love that moment.
It's good to start early.
None of this could even make it into theaters at this time. None of it. It's so amazing.
It's great.
I blame Mad Max for my smoking habit. Kids don't watch. Sorry.
No.
I blame Waterworld for my smoking habit. Kids don't watch Waterworld.
Oh, hold on. Rachel wants to jump in.
Oh, I just wanted to say, like, I literally in my likes it says I never get tired of watching Dennis Hopper chew on the scenery.
Totally.
But and like that entire scene where he's like with the fake eye and he's like, it looks like shit, doesn't it?
Yes,
how does
yes,
this look?
Yes.
Oh, it looks great.
Always ask the kids, they're honest.
I do like it. He was in Super Mario Bros. Too. He played King Koopa.
Oh God.
Which
amazing.
Is a terrible movie, but he's actually
Speed,
probably the most enjoyable
anyone?
Part.
Amazing.
Yeah.
No. Dennis Hopper for
so,
the win.
So yeah, so I did like him. It's really sad that he is he has left us, but I did like him. So there we go. So all right, so moving on to dislikes, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, Julia, we start with you.
So the women in this movie, after seeing, which I should say that I saw this movie with Jeffrey and some of my other friends. After having watched a matinee of Mad Max Fury Road, we went to their house and watched Waterworld so we could do a not enough water, too much water combo. And after seeing Mad Max Fury Road coming to this movie where the women, there are two of them, I guess maybe it passes the Bechdel test because possibly Gene Triplehorn talks to that little girl a little bit more about things that aren't men. I'm not even sure, though, if it does. And it's just... Gene Triplehorn seems to exist to be able to take off her clothes, and Wikipedia tells me that that was a body double and that she actually wanted to have different actresses come to her trailer to have auditions for being her body double, which is interesting information, but
wow.
Really it was just like, yeah, taking off her clothes and being a damsel in distress, which is very sad. And there really weren't other women in the movie, and it... sadness.
So I do think it passes the Bechdel test, but I don't think that's
sure.
a triumph.
I'm not sure if it does or doesn't, because I'm not sure when they talk how much they're not talking about men.
I feel like they have a couple conversations that are like 1 second long where they're like talking about crayons
so, like,
or something.
I think it's supposed to be they talk for at least 30 seconds about something that's not men. So I don't know if it...
Yeah, I wouldn't say it passes Bechdel.
Even Rachel? If it did, I wouldn't say it's a triumph at all. I don't think so. But Rachel's.
Yeah, I just... the thing that just drove me the most nuts is, like, how broadcast it was. Like, of course, this woman is going to want to, you know, obviously sleep with Grumpy Cat. Because reasons, like when she's on the boat and she kind of like comes up against his chest and just goes, oh, like just broadcasting like, oh my, suddenly I have become mutant sexual. Allow me to pet your sort of greasy looking chest hair, Mariner. I mean, that it was just like so bad. Sorry. Yeah.
And in that way, very different. In terms of the way it treated women, than I think Mad Max Fury Road. Despite the
there's
fact
no
that they,
comparison. There is,
yeah.
is no fucking
despite
comparison.
The fact that it's obviously there's also sex slavery in Fury Road, but yeah. Well, fair enough. Well, Rachel, I think it is your turn.
Sure. So let's see. The little girl was the most annoying child Messiah I've ever encountered in a movie. And every moment that the Mariner did not pitch her overboard just made me sad. And I'd like to add in an extra note for how does the little girl who has lived in a goddamn floating city her entire fucking life not know how to swim?
Oh,
how
God,
is that
yes.
even possible?
No
oh,
kidding.
That's actually the thing I dislike most about this movie.
How does anybody in this world not know how to drive any form of boat?
What? Oh.
Well, yeah,
that actually makes sense.
The thing is, I asked about the living in that floating city her whole life thing, too, and then some of my friends seemed to think that she had actually been raised on that bit of dry land, and the people that they find in the end are her parents, and she was only in that little city for a little while, I guess.
No, she's found specifically in a floating crib. So she was just a baby when she left. They are her parents at the end.
Okay, but she shouldn't have any memory of it then. What?
Yeah.
Why hasn't she learned to swim?
Well, and let's consider her parents for just a moment that are like, this is obviously the most annoying child in the world that I've given birth to. Let us tattoo her and then set her adrift.
Tattoo her. Right. That's great parenting right there.
A+.
A+.
Torture our infant.
Jeffrey, did you have a thing you wanted to note?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's jump to you, Paul.
My first is like, okay, you'd think that a world that's been covered by water would see the value and use of somebody who can breathe underwater for something better than fertilizer. I mean, the Mariners got useful, interesting, and essential skills in this sort of society. He can dive underwater. He can get stuff. And what are we going to do? Oh, no, he's a mutie. We're going to turn him into fertilizer. It's just an epic amount of... It's as stupid as Lil Girl not being able to learn how to swim. It's like, he can breathe underwater. Don't you see the value in this and having him in your community? But no, we're just going to turn him into fertilizer. You got enough fertilizer. You just had someone die and get turned into fertilizer. Use him for archaeological salvage, getting fish, any other things. I mean, the world's covered by water. Dirt. The world's covered by water, and he can breathe underwater. You might want to consider this be actually something you might actually want to exploit rather than turn away. And he's the only mutant we see, so what is this whole anti-mutant thing in the first place? I mean, we know the polar ice caps melted. Was there a nuclear war too? I don't know. But it's just so stupid. And you'd think even Dennis Hopper could figure out that maybe somebody who could breathe underwater would be useful for his crew. He should try to recruit the Mariner rather than trying to kill him off. I mean, we see that scene with the guys in the water with the breathing masks. The Mariner wouldn't even need the breathing masks. He'd be awesome. But no, he's a mutant. He has to die. He's like, what? And this is the only mutant we have an example of, so it's bad world building. Sorry, ranting too much.
Fair enough. Jen?
I just have to say that's actually one of the few things that makes sense, is the human's reactions to a mutant, and the fact that there's only a couple people that are like, actually, this is kind of awesome, the old crazy guy, who's a cool character, by the way. But to me, it's kind of like human reaction in Marvel Universe trying to kill them off, because they're the next logical step in evolution. So therefore, people have a reason to be afraid of that, because they will be then rendered completely pointless.
Okay.
So I actually had no problem with it.
No, it doesn't really work. It's a way to create unnecessary conflict. It doesn't do anything other than make his life harder. But there isn't really any useful reason for that hatred. At least in X-Men, when they hate the mutants, is because they're literally possibly dangerous to them. And so it plays on all of their irrational fears. Not only that they're going to be outdone, but that they could be killed by mutants. And in fact, in the X-Men universe, mutants do try to wipe out all of regular humanity a number of times.
Multiple times, yes.
Multiple times. Here, there's no evidence that he's done anything other than exist. And so their only solution is, let's just commit genocide anytime we find one. We don't have any explanation for why.
We never see in humanity a reason for people to randomly kill people that are different from them.
No, we see reasons. We disagree with those reasons. We think those reasons are immoral or unethical. We may even think that those reasons don't make sense. But when you put them in a sociological perspective, they do. They're just humanity being evil. This isn't even given, they're not even presented enough information where we can understand why this has even been rationalized. They just want to kill him because he's an abomination.
It's just a way to get him in that cage and have him nearly drown in the recycling pool. That's the only reason why they turn on him.
Yeah, basically the reason it happens is because the plot demands that he get in a cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's the impression I got too. It made no sense to me whatsoever. I was like, oh my god, he's someone who's well suited to this environment that could help humanity continue. Kill him now.
Conveniently, so he can then save the two female characters, and then
the two most annoying women in the city. Yes.
Okay. Well, anyways, Jeffrey, your first dislike.
Okay. Another one from Kevin. Some of this has been touched on a little bit. Dislike: child abuse. This kid has a large tattoo on her back as an infant, which probably hurt a lot. She was abandoned to the waves. She was raised by a woman so negligent that she was never even taught to swim on Waterworld. And then she was repeatedly almost murdered by Kevin Costner. By the time the smokers get their hands on her, she's already gone full Patty Hearst with the Mariner. He is the danger speech about what a badass he is, and how much faith she has in him, is 100% unearned. Based on everything we've seen of him so far, it's pure Stockholm Syndrome. If she were being honest, she would just have said, "You better hope my abusive foster dad doesn't come for me, because he literally places less value on human life than he does on his own piss." Anyway, I know it's supposed to be a crapsack future, but does no one on Waterworld object to cruelty to children?
The answer to that is no.
Well, when it's that kid...
That poor kid. She gets thrown in the water.
Her name is Enola, which is alone spelled backwards. I can see why it'd be alone spelled backwards, because yeah.
Also, what's up with punitive haircuts?
He's a frustrated cosmetologist, okay?
I'm sorry, if Kevin doesn't have at least one dislike about the fact that Enola is named for the airplane that dropped the bomb, I'm going to be really mad.
The Enola Gay?
That's obviously part of the grand conspiracy.
I think he missed that one.
Okay, so I don't think anybody's going to bring this up, but you do know that Dennis Hopper's character, the person he refers to as a cousin in the picture was the guy on the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah, it's the captain of the Exxon Valdez. It is the Exxon Valdez.
Is it the actual ship? Oh my god.
That's one of my likes.
Come on.
Okay,
how do you miss these things?
I didn't realize it was. I didn't see a name on the side of the ship.
When it goes sinking down into the waves.
I didn't. At about an hour and 30 minutes, I was just watching it because I had to finish it. Because I just wanted to go to Taco Bell and get a taco, which is what I did do when the movie was over. So, whatever. Fair enough. Okay. Anything else? Or we jump into you, Jen?
I think it's my turn.
Okay, go, Jen.
I dislike the fact that this movie is so bad that nobody likes it.
That is like the most apt dislike that has ever been named on Torture Syndrome.
It's so sad.
It makes me sad.
It makes me so happy.
I'm sorry. It means I'll never get another movie that's even remotely like Waterworld. There will never be another, you know, pure boat film other than war movies, which there's lots of, which are cool, but I'm not going to get any more amazing scenes of jet skis and water skiers.
Skidoos!
And it makes
there
me
needs to
really,
be more skidoo combat.
It makes me really, really angry. So that's my dislike.
I'm sorry, Jen.
You should be.
I'm so happy right now. I love you, Jen.
I know you do.
Jen, this is how I felt when we did the Black Hole podcast.
I imagine.
Except the Black Hole was a better movie. At least
I do feel
robots.
Better knowing that there are some people out there that actually enjoy this movie.
Oh, so, all right.
It's
all
just
right.
None of you.
Just none
moving
of you.
On.
Yeah.
Moving
on. You know, Rachel just put in the things that Twohy was involved in this, who is the same guy who did Pitch Black and Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, he was the writer. Also, I will say that, like, at the time that this came out, Roger Ebert didn't even give it a negative review. He didn't give it two thumbs up, but he was like, basically, yeah, it was not bad. He was like, it was flawed, but it was cool to see the water stuff.
Okay, well, just hold on, because we'll be getting to that.
Okay. Okay, so I'll go to my first dislike then, and I'm going to pick a silly one. because it just needs to be said, which is this film managed to get Jack Daniels to sign off letting them use their product, but could not convince Spam to allow them to use their product.
Oh, you stole that from me!
We were given Smeet instead of fucking Spam. It is the most blatant, like, obvious moment, because he's holding this bottle of Jack Daniels during this whole damn scene, and he's, like, swigging it, and he's just holding it. It's obvious it's Jack Daniels, but when he throws down the meat, it's Smeet, not Spam. And I just felt like you spent this much money, you could not convince Spam, the one food other than a Twinkie that would survive nuclear apocalypse, to sign off on being in this movie.
Sean, Spam is made by the Hormel Corporation in Austin, Minnesota. Minnesotans have standards. Sorry, Jack.
Bullshit. I can guarantee you there's like a page somewhere of Spam in movies, and it's just like a shit ton of bad movies. I bet you Spam is even in Mac and Me. I will go back frame by frame, and I will check. I will check in the cupboard whether there's Spam in their cupboards. I will, and there's going to be Spam in there. Guaranteed.
Probably.
$5
The aliens were made out of Spam.
Well, they may have been made out
of Spam.
That's
why they look. That's why they look so creepy. They're like little blow-up dolls made out of Spam with googly eyes.
Oh, God, those aliens are so creepy.
They also got Smirnoff, by
anyway.
The way. Smirnoff was a yes. Just saying.
But they got Smirnoff there too. Were there any cigarette companies that were represented?
No, they never actually specifically showed the.
There were big boxes of Smirnoff on the Exxon Valdez.
Well, stay classy, Smirnoff. Stay classy.
Was that what the captain was alleged to have been drinking?
No, I think he's drinking something else. But
wait, who's drinking?
Deacon.
He was drinking the guy
crashed. Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be hilariously meta. I hope so.
The captain was drunk,
I hope so.
Alrighty. Well, we made it through a whole round, guys. So it now falls back on Julia to bring us back to Joy.
Okay, so the second thing that I liked, Rachel took as her first like, and I thought she was going to save it for last, so I saved it for second. But my second thing that I actually did like about this movie was the score. And in particular, while I was watching the movie, I didn't think the score was very good, because a lot of the times in the movie, the music isn't very well synced with what's happening on screen, and the mood cues are all wrong, and it just feels weird. But then when I watched Rachel's band performance, I was like, this music is actually pretty cool, and this band show is amazing. So thanks, Waterworld, for making that possible. But yeah, like, Rachel, I super loved your band show. I thought it was awesome. And you fully deserve to win the national band championships with that. And I wish that Waterworld had been half as good as your band's production.
Thank you.
So I will say that the music was actually one of my dislikes, and has nothing to do with Rachel. Actually, I thought Rachel's show was much more interesting than the music. It's that I always felt like it was in an Enya music video.
What?
Well, that's what I was saying about in the actual movie. They use it terribly, and they put really weird cues on. Like, there's like all this triumphant music that happens when things that are not really triumphant are happening on screen, and it was just very odd. Yeah. And then there's that whole, like, Kevin Costner teaches the little girl how to swim after abusing her a bunch, and it's like suddenly Enya and dolphins frolicking in a massage parlor somewhere.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Every time the music, I just, like, oh, God, I feel like I'm in, like, a new wave music moment. I feel like I was in my mom's car in, like, the late 80s. That was what my mom was into. She was into all that new wave music. She listened to Enya and Enigma and all them groups.
That was probably the 90s, actually, but...
Look, man, I don't remember times very well. It was some year.
It would be in keeping with the time that Waterworld came out.
Fair enough.
95, just so you know.
Fine, okay? It was 95. Chill. Just okay.
Next.
All right, Rachel.
Okay, so what I really... did start finding some joy in this movie was Kevin Costner hanging out with plants. So, like, there's this whole thing where you see him and he's just, like, chilling with his tomato plant. And that was pretty awesome. And, I mean, it wasn't a plant, but I like it when he was carrying around the jar of dirt like it was his little baby. You know, he has a jar of dirt. And then, you know, he was chilling with his lime plant at, like, the beginning of the movie. And I was just very, very charmed by the fact that in this watery hell of a future, touching another man's limes is a fighting offense. You don't touch another man's limes.
Damn Skippy.
In a world where you have to live on a boat, scurvy is a big problem.
That's what I was thinking. Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like those limes keeping them alive, man.
Except because the one, but then there was like, I was also very concerned when, you know, there was like the brave little tomato plant like floating in the water and he went over to grab it and I was like, yeah, you're going to save the little tomato plant. And then he just kind of like pitches it, you know, into the, down into the hold. And I was like, oh my God, I think he just killed his tomato plant.
By the way, he does actually kill it because he eats all the leaves off of it. Remember when he meets Kim Coates in the water? Kim Coates, another great character actor, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
We see that plant, and it's just like a withered stick.
No, that plant is like this weird, like, mutant tomato plant, because it's more like a tomato tree. So it survives anything.
No, it doesn't. He eats all the leaves of it and kills it.
Did you see the trunk on that thing? I mean, that thing has a trunk.
Well, first off,
a trunk.
They're clearly different set pieces. Like, one was actually a tomato plant, and then when he threw it, it was like a cheap plant from Michael's, and then the third one was like a bonsai tree.
The bonsai tomato.
The bonsai tomato tree?
Hey, I'm going to make this happen now.
If they just said, like, it's a bonsai tomato tree, it would have been like, fine, okay. Like, I can believe that they've done weird splicing of tomatoes to make them grow in seawater. I'm cool with that. That's fine.
Maybe all of his plants were mutants. Maybe he had a theme.
The mutant theme of plants. All right, Paul, your go.
Oh, my second like? Okay, I like the fact that this movie did try to have some culture world building. We see the movie try to establish rules for how these migrating wanderers actually interact on the high seas. There are rules of engagement. There are rules of trade. There's rules for when he actually gets to the atoll and they say, oh no, we have enough trades. We don't have it. And then he shows up the dirt and, but okay, that'll get you to buy in. A lot of the movie doesn't quite go through thinking about some of the consequences of what they're showing very well, but the social aspects of trade and commerce and how people interact in this very, very isolated and thinly populated environment, because it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of people left on the planet, except maybe on the Exxon Valdez.
They breed like rabbits.
But when people meet, there are definite rules of engagement, and I appreciate the movie tried to show us some of those and shows what happens when you actually violate them. You get violent reactions from people when you violate those rules.
That is true, although I think there's also an element there I do appreciate that those rules are starting to deteriorate.
That's a clear sign that Waterworld is dying. Waterworld is dying. I don't know if the movie really sells it that well, but I was reading between the lines and that the human population and humanity is going down the tube, so to speak, because the main atoll is clearly out of supplies and they're killing people and they're killing mutants. And he talks about having gone to another atoll, which was burned by raiders. And our smoker friends are worried about the amount of gasoline, the oil they have left. So humanity's not doing very well. And I think the movie is also making that clear, that things are breaking down because humanity is breaking down. The dregs of humanity are not, they're doing worse than in the Mad Max world. And that's saying something.
Yeah, and I think we see that very clearly in two counterpoint scenes. That when he sees that first drifter, that drifter takes his lemons, right? Well, he doesn't know he takes them, but he takes the lemons and then he runs off, right? We see clearly, right, they have the conversation about the rules, and we know that he's stolen the lemons, and so he's not following the rules, right?
Nothing's free in Waterworld.
Right, he says nothing's free in Waterworld. And then we get to the Kim Coates scene, where we see those rules being brought up again, right? He's running the flag for trade, da-da-da-da, and that doesn't go the way it's supposed to either. And with Kim Coates, he ends up having to kill him because he reneges on a trade, which either you're not supposed to do and it's against the rules, or Kim Coates' character is clearly insane. So it's unclear. But Jen, you wanted to jump in.
Two things. In terms of the humanity dying off, they have that slightly hilarious scene, but also very interesting when the people of the Atoll try to get him to stay so that they can he can breed with the girl.
Yeah.
Which is just fantastic. That was one of the best parts of the world building. It's like, it's super obvious they're dying off.
That reminded me of A Boy and His Dog.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was probably a callback to that. Well, maybe. I don't know if Table 2 had actually seen the movie, but that's where my mind immediately went to Vic and the Underground City.
And remember the reasons that they give, and then we should maybe move on. The reasons they give is it implies that incest is undesirable.
And has been, yeah, is underway, yeah, because they don't have a choice.
Well, there are like 50 people on that flotilla, so there's a lot of incest going on. Delicious. All right.
You scare me sometimes. Next!
Jeffrey, go.
Like, the smokers. The smokers are the key to understanding the world. Look what they do. They go around smoking too much, using fossil fuels, burning everything down. Then the deacon gives a speech at the end about chopping down every tree and damming every river. This would seem to make no sense if they're in it for loot or power. But wait a minute. Dennis Hopper isn't the war chief, he's the deacon. The smokers are obviously a planetary suicide cult, and there's no better evidence than that the choice of their home base, the Exxon Valdez. By the time this movie had been made, the Valdez had been renamed to the Mediterranean. Someone in the deluge found it, rechristened it, put up pictures of its disgraced captain, filled its tanks with gas and its cargo sections with pre-flood cigarettes and smeet. And if we have a deacon captain on a tanker, why not bishop admirals commanding fleets of ships named for other ecological disasters? There's probably a Commodore Pope holding court in the great sea fortress Deepwater Horizon. So who set all of this up? Who would benefit from an Earth that is never allowed to recover its ecology? A humanity keeping its life short and brutal, a civilization that never comes out of its dark age. The answer comes from the same place as the water. Space. Clearly the technique of mining asteroids was perfected for terraforming Mars. Now that Earth is in decline, the Martian colonists wanted to make sure that it never returns to its position of solar system hegemony. And they've done it on the cheap by setting up the smokers with all the tobacco they could ever want and a dogma of burning and destruction. And the movie shows us all of this with just the slightest of hints. Well played, Mr. Costner.
So wow. I have a question for Kevin, if I may. Since the Martian colonists are involved here, were androids also involved?
I don't know. Kevin didn't tell me that one, but I think we should assume yes.
Okay, because that would explain a lot, you know, that we saw that movie Blade Runner, which clearly must be true as well. Right, and that was a society that was on the brink of economic collapse, so
I choose to believe that this all is taking place in the Douglas Adams universe, and that it's actually dolphins that achieved mind control, convinced humanity that they should mine for water, brought it to Earth, and now they've taken over the planet.
I like that one.
That works, but why can't androids be involved?
Because androids don't do well in water.
Right.
How do you know? How many androids have you met that can't swim?
Every single one of them.
Every single one of them.
Really? They can't swim?
Well, you don't see a lot of androids.
It is a well-known fact, Sean.
That androids can swim.
It is known.
It has been scientifically established by many sources of great repute and peer-reviewed.
So neither can they dream of electric sheep, but they cannot swim either.
Nope. Poor thing. That's,
it's terrible.
It is a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. All right. Jen,
you're
go.
Oh, crap. It's my turn?
You said next in
kidding.
The chat box.
Yeah, but I don't know what order we're going in. Okay. My next like is going to be the action sequences in this film. We kind of touched on this a little bit earlier with the Rube Goldberg machine that is the Trimaran, which is amazing. But this really has some super exciting and awesome and hilarious action sequences. The attack on the atoll at the very beginning, well, not the very beginning, but towards the beginning is... it's just amazing. It's got water skiers, it's got skidoos, it's got a freaking plane. It has, you know, machine guns mounted on barges. It's amazing. It's exciting, and pretty much every action sequence after that, except maybe the one on the X and Valdez, manages to remain just fun action. And apparently I'm all wrong. Please, Sean, tell me why I'm all wrong.
I gotta save it, because this is a dislike.
How could you dislike the action sequences?
Oh, allow me to explain it when we get there.
Yeah.
So looking forward to it.
I'll probably co-sign on that, too.
I'll probably be agreeing with Sean on that one.
All right.
As much as it might pain me to do so. We'll see.
I'm done.
So you're
apparently
wrong,
have
Jen.
A massive dislike upon this.
Yeah, well, now it became one because you decided to make it a like. I would have skipped it and just gone to pee water, but now I can't do that one.
Shut up, the pee water is awesome. The Mariner wanted to be an astronaut all his life.
No.
It was the closest he could get.
How could you not like that awesome... sorry. How could you not like that awesome...
Let go, Jeffrey. Finish your thought.
How could you not like that awesome Rube Golden Shower device he has for purifying...
Exactly!
It's like a snowsuit, except outside.
Because I don't want to watch Kevin Costner, like, having orgasms while drinking pee water. Which is what he does.
That makes one of us.
You have a very dirty mind, Sean.
He, like, makes love to that water.
If you were living on a land
and rubs it on his lips,
water?
Like, he's just really into it. And I just don't want to watch that.
All right, your turn.
I'm just going to go with one that is maybe a legitimate like, which is that however briefly I got the joy of thinking that Kevin Costner's character might be eaten by a giant mutant fish, and then he didn't.
Fish.
However, I did like the idea of him using himself as bait, which was a lot of fun, even though it made no sense in the context of the larger world. But it was fun to watch, and I did get real excitement for a brief moment. So.
As in real excitement, because you thought he'd actually been eaten and then the movie was going to end because the women were both idiots and didn't know how to swim or operate a boat?
For a moment, I just forgot that part. I was just like, oh, they'll just continue on without him. They'll just turn the little boat in X direction, and they'll just make it. It'll be fine. You know, smokers will all die because they're stupid, and we'll be fine. For a brief moment, I had a hope. And then the movie took that from me.
Like it took everything else.
It took everything from me. It even ruined water, which is why I'm not drinking water. All I think is it's just recycled pee.
Next.
So, that brings us to our last dislike. Julia, we end with you, ma'am.
All right, so I'm really having a hard time choosing here because I have two equally, but I'm assuming that somebody else is going to talk about the incoherence of the plot. It's kind of already been mentioned. So I'm going to talk about how Kevin Costner is a terrible, terrible hero. He is unsympathetic. And we don't ever have a reason to want him to succeed. He's, like, you calling him Grumpy Cat makes it sound so cute. But it's not cute. Like, there's just no reason to want him to have a good time or to be with Gene Triplehorn or anything. Like, he's just awful the whole way through. And I know there's supposed to be redemption because he teaches that girl how to swim. But, like, no, they don't give us enough characterization. He's just terrible. And that, I think, was the single most... reason I disliked this movie. Like, just watching him, I did not want to have to watch him be a horrible person for 2 hours. So, Kevin Costner's character development was terrible, and he was just an awful person. And it's okay to have an unsympathetic character if you give us a reason to want to follow them. I think that's why, like, House of Cards works for a lot of people. This did not do that.
Okay, so the one thing I wanted to know, because I totally agree with Julie on this one, like when you see him go sailing into the sunset, you're like, why is anyone upset that this asshole is leaving? Because he's such an asshole. But, so it's like normally in movies, you're supposed to have what's called a save the cat moment. Like, even if your hero is a bad, you know, and a lot of times heroes start out as being not nice and not sympathetic, so then you can see them evolve into better people and you can feel good about it. But there's always supposed to be, at the very beginning of the movie, some kind of what's called a save the cat moment to show you that there is, like, good within the hero, that he's the sort of person that you can believe can develop and change and become someone who's better. Like, and literally the classic example is, you know, you've seen this guy who's been a jerk for his first couple scenes, and then he comes across a kitten that's stuck in the tree, and he saves the cat. And you're like, well, he can't be all bad. He at least likes cats. And there were no moments like that for Kevin Costner, except maybe teaching the little girl to swim after he'd already been a total dick to her.
I mean, like, at that point, he's already thrown her in the water and, like, almost watched her drown and cut her hair and, like,
tried to sell her to a pedophile? Mm.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that part, like, I think we're supposed to believe that, like, he wasn't ever actually planning it all along, but you don't actually have any reason to trust that.
Yeah.
There's no evidence that he isn't actually going to do it, yeah.
Oh, he was totally going to do it.
Even in our early scene, we see that his response to somebody taking from him is basically just to throw them to the wolves. Right? Because that guy that...
You don't touch a man's limes, Sean!
Don't touch his limes. Don't touch his limes, because he will break your mast and leave you to be eaten alive by smokers.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yay. Yay. So there you go. Alright, well, Rachel, I think it's up to you now.
Okay, so, I would just like to note that beyond the incoherence of the plot and the painful dumbness of everyone, it's basically, not only is everyone dumb, the movie is basically populated by, it's like 95% white people who should be dead of skin cancer. And that kind of bothers me. Well, you know, the lung cancer for the smokers, the skin cancer for everyone else. And then I guess what also really kind of bothered me is, you know, looking at the little girl, she looked pretty dang white to me, which made me go, like, why the fuck are her parents living on the tropical paradise that used to be Mount Everest because reasons, and tattooing kanji on her back? Were her parents a bunch of fucking weeaboos?
What's a weeaboo?
Oh, that's a very derogatory term for anime fans who like running around and speaking pidgin Japanese to each other, and it's a little embarrassing to anyone who's actually studied Japanese culture.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so that is my final dislike.
Today's word is weeaboo. Thank you, Rachel. We learned something today.
I try to be very educational.
And learning is half the battle.
Yes.
G.I. Joe. Yeah.
The other half is seeing what Jeffrey's hand's all about.
Yes, what you got, Jeffrey?
I was just going to agree, as someone who's about as white as most of the people in the movie and nearly gave himself heat exhaustion after an hour in the sun today, yeah, that's going to be a bad situation.
Oh no, white people should die off within the first 150 years.
Yeah, like, I literally, bring back marching band. I literally got second-degree sunburns during marching band camps. If you put me out there on the water where not only is the sun beating down on you, it's reflecting from the water so it gets you coming and going, I'd be like a little burnt cinder in the first 3 hours. I wouldn't survive.
Yeah. So let me understand your wording, Jen. You said that white people should die in the first 150 years or that they would die in the first 100?
They would die.
Okay. Because those are very different statements. One is like, I hope if the apocalypse comes, all the whiteys die. And the other one's like, they probably would die. Yeah.
No, they just probably would die.
Okay. I just want to make
sure.
In
pretty much every apocalyptic scenario, white people should die off pretty quickly because of the skin cancer.
Again with that word should. Oh,
I mean would.
You mean would. You only go to a different letter in the alphabet. today's letter is S. All right, Paul, it's up to you.
Okay. It's a relatively small thing, but it annoyed the crap out of me, so I'm going to go with it anyway. It's Kevin Costner and his magical adventures with the diving bell. Okay, first of all, why does he need a diving bell? He has gills. He can breathe underwater already. Why the heck does he need one? Second, every time he goes underwater with the diving bell, bad things happen. At the beginning of the movie, he's underwater doing stuff and he comes up and the guy has stolen his limes. And then later, okay, they just escaped from the smokers in that nice little trap that Dennis Hopper set. Clever work on Dennis Hopper's part. Nearly got him. Okay, so they've gone away and now suddenly Gene Triplehorn suddenly wants to know where the dry land is. So, okay, so we're being chased by a smoker, so let's stop and then we'll get go on a magical water dive down to the 100-foot skyscrapers. Of course, since the last time they had this, he went diving underwater with the diving bell that he doesn't need. I mean, I can see why she needs it. Of course, when he come back up, of course, bad things happen. It's like, how stupid does this movie think we are?
Really stupid. Actually, as far as I can tell, this movie doesn't care and assumes that you don't care because the only reason you're really there is to watch stunts in the water.
Skidoo stunts.
Yeah. So I've got a theory.
Go ahead.
Are you allowed to have a theory or is only Kevin allowed to have theories?
I've had theories on this show since we started it.
Yeah, but Kevin hasn't been on this show. That's what I'm saying.
Well, Kevin can have his own theory when it's his turn.
Okay, I just wanted
just
to
skip the theory.
I feel like in the old days when he was a younger man, this was how he met women.
Diving underwater?
He took them, he's like, oh, let me show you, baby.
Let me show you dress.
Let me show you the underwater, hey, baby, right? And then he took her down, and then she's like, oh, it's cool. And then she realized it's creepy because it's like dead cities.
Seem to be making this major assumption that Grumpy Cat has ever known the touch of a woman or a man. And I'm not buying it.
I didn't realize, let me just say.
He makes love to his water.
The diving bell was something that he, like, had hanging around. I thought it was something that he, like, jury-rigged.
So, like, he made a giant jellyfish one day?
Jury-rigged just to show her.
Nobody had it at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, then he probably has it so he can fish up junk. I don't know. Why are you expecting this to make sense?
It's how he used to meet women when he was a teen. That's it.
I think that checks out. I'm having flashbacks to the Ringworld engineers, and that's not good.
I mean, like, come on, you're, like, in an enclosed space. He's like, hey, baby, I'll take you down, right? Because he doesn't want her to know that they got gills, right?
I'll take you down.
And then he gets her down there, and he's like, look how beautiful it is. And then she's all really close, and then it's hot and heavy, and then he, like, you know, he goes in for the kiss. Unfortunately, he kisses like he's been sucking on his lemons the whole time, so it's no good.
Oh God. Yeah. So, as my friend who is visiting me from Chicago said, because she watched this movie with me, she said, the kissing is like two dogs eating spaghetti.
That was way cuter when it was Lady and the Tramp, though. Like, way cuter. I would watch that scene 10 billion times again before having to watch that insufferable kiss.
This was awful. Jeffrey, what do you got?
Well, I'm just, in addition to what Sean was saying, once you're down there, you know, you're a couple hundred feet below the surface. You've been down there for a bit. You don't want to get the bends. You've got to come up slowly. How are you going to pass the time? It's way smooth. I think Sean's got something.
Yep.
Boom chicka wabba.
The day I got something is the day the world becomes water world. Oh, great. All right. We're on to you now, Jeffrey, are we not?
Uh-huh.
All right, go for it.
Dislike. Others may disagree with me, but the soundtrack didn't really do it for me. I think post-apocalyptic flicks should have rad guitar stylings or 70s creepy keyboard work. This was 1995. Kevin Costner was at the height of his influence. Are you telling me he couldn't get a meeting with Wendy Carlos, or at least Toto? Come on. To be fair, Kevin didn't see that marching show, so...
Yeah.
Wait. Toto?
Toto.
Yeah, they did the Dune movie.
Yeah.
Did
Which
they
has
really?
A great score.
They like, did. Toto, like the same
Toto
that's like...
Yes. Africa Toto.
That song?
Yeah.
I don't know what the lyrics are.
That's called Africa.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to sing it because in case the listeners have never heard 80s music before, it's really important that they know what it sounds like. Yeah.
That song is super beloved by French people.
It's a good song.
They play it all the time on French radio.
That's awesome.
Why? That's saying it's a bad movie, but I don't know why.
Wait, no, Toto. No, the Toto's
Africa.
Africa.
Yeah.
It's a great song. It's got wonderful harmonies.
I don't doubt that. I have it on my iPod. I'm just wondering why French people have
French radio is a mystery to me, but like when I lived in France, I found out some things about what French people still love that has kind of gone out of popular culture here. Another one is Black Velvet by Alana Miles. That one still gets continuous radio play.
This explains the whole Jerry Lewis thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't claim to understand. I just witness.
When Bon Jovi came back in like 2000, the Spanish were super into him.
Bon Jovi's concerts sell out all the time. It's crazy. He's like 100 years old. He still looks like he's 25.
But I have to agree with Kevin's thoughts on the soundtrack, especially having seen this directly after seeing Mad Max Fury Road. I was just like, yeah, Mad Max Fury Road had wailing guitar and it was awesome, and this is just not actually working.
Okay, so question. Would this movie have been better if in the Smokers' fleet of ships there was like one flotilla, like one sailing ship with a guy with a two-headed guitar,
yes,
shooting
yes.
flames into the air?
Yes.
Yes. Automatically, yeah. It would have been better.
Somewhere there's a cool movie that cannot be improved with the Doof Warrior, but I don't know what it is.
I don't know.
maybe Sons of Steel. That may be the one that can't be improved.
No,
by.
The Doof Warrior would be even amazing in Sons of Steel. Why not?
He would just pour sour milk on himself and just play that guitar without a shirt on. Yeah.
My turn.
Yeah. I just want you to germinate on that for a little bit, Jen. Just think about Sons of Steel for a moment before you get to your dislike. Because I know you really like that film. It's one of your favorites that we've done for Torture Cinema, so...
Again, and I'm not allowed to like this movie, but you guys were like, ah, Sons of Steel! And I have to listen to that. Constantly.
Because it's great.
There's nothing great about that movie.
Go ahead, Jen.
I'm gonna just continue with this soundtrack fucking sucks. And I'm sorry, Rachel's band did a great job of using music that, separate from the film, is not horrible, but it makes no sense. We've already kind of said this. It makes no sense within the context of this film. It's like they took the soundtrack from an action comedy and then decided to make Waterworld into an action comedy just by using the soundtrack. And at some points, that actually does make sense. Like every time they go hang out with the Smokers on the Exxon Valdez. And that's actually the only part of this entire soundtrack that is hilariously awesome. And I forget what song it is that they're playing, but when he jumps into the car after getting his new eyeball... Does anybody remember what the song is?
No.
Crap, I wish I remembered. Anyway, and to be honest, the soundtrack to me managed to make this movie worse than it actually was because it's so discordant with what's happening on screen at so many points in time. So there.
Aw.
I'm done.
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to find out what the song was.
Oh.
There's the Music Box theme by Mark Isham and the Peter Gunn theme, which is, I think, the one you're referring
that
to
one,
by
yeah.
Henry Mancini.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the one that goes. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun. Yes. That's the only time that the music actually makes sense in a scene.
Yeah, that's the Spy Hunter theme.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Smokers. I love them so much.
Okay, we're done.
I played too much of that video game. I know.
We played that in Marching Band. Rachel maybe played it. Did you play Peter Gunn?
No, we did not.
That would have been an amazing band performance.
It would be fun. So that's the song. Yeah. Okay. There you go. So that's all you got? That's it?
Yep.
Fair enough. All right, so I guess it's me. And I said I was going to talk about why I didn't like the action scenes.
Yeah.
Please do.
And I will say this, that I don't have a problem with boat chases. That's fine. I'm cool with all that. I don't mind jet skis. That's fine. However, the big battle sequence in the first half of the movie felt so much like it was meant to be like a Universal Studios action, like, dramatic thingy. Basically like a ride. And my understanding is there is actually a Waterworld ride thingy.
There's a Waterworld performance, which is amazing, right. And everybody should go watch it.
Right. Well, everything about this felt like it was meant to be that, and in ways that made no sense. So we have these ramps so they can jump over the walls. Why? They have artillery. They've got things that can explode. Just blow up the walls. And clearly they don't need to jump over the walls. Their freaking aircraft gun can shoot through the walls. Right? They can blow them up. And they have a plane, as Jeffrey notes in the comments. A motherfucking plane. They've got a plane. Right? They got, like, why do they need the plane to, like, have the ski dudes jump over? That makes no sense.
But
like,
it looks so much cooler.
They're not fish people. When they get to the other side, they can't, like, do the Kevin Costner, like, swimmy thing. They're not freaking Michael Phelps. Right? They're not good at this. So all of this, and then there's, like, the bit where he, like, oh, let's shoot the little hook in the thing and we'll just turn the boat. And it's like, really? Really? Like, we're just going to have this boat turn and he's just going to shoot up the other boat and that's going to be normal so we can take Dennis Hopper's eye. Why? None of it. It's just silly. It's just a silly sequence of action that feels forced at every moment. It is not like Mad Max, where the action sequences are beautiful. This is just action sequences that just seem like we're like filming something that happened at Universal, is basically what it feels like. Rachel, you had a hand first, so I will shut up and let you have it.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree that basically the way a lot of the action sequences went, yeah, it you know, Jen, you were saying like action comedy. It's like the movie had such an uneven tone.
Yeah.
Because half the time it was trying to be like a relatively serious kind of science fiction action movie, like, you know, hey, I'd expect Twohey to write. And then a lot of the other times you're getting these really contrived and ridiculous action sequences, like that. Oh, and the one at the end where the bad guys, you know, three of them are riding right toward the girl, and the Mariner like bungee jumps down to grab her, and the all three guys like crash together and blow up. And I was sitting there going like, what the fuck is this movie even trying to be at this point?
Or cartoons in the boat.
Yeah.
You guys are all anti-fun. That's the only conclusion I can come
what?
To.
What?
Jen, anti-fun.
Jen, it's not that we're anti-fun. It's just that this movie doesn't seem to want to take a tone and stick with it.
That's true.
We all love Fury Road,
totally,
damn it.
Yeah. It's trying to be like super gritty post-apocalyptic, and then suddenly, you know, like as soon as the action sequences start up, which should have been like, you know, say something like, hey, think about the action sequences in Fury Road where it built onto that gritty post-apocalyptic tone and also did the really awesome thing where a lot of times it told you something about the characters by how they acted in the action sequences, which none of these really did other than they told you the characters were idiots. But
constantly.
It's like the action is very comedic. And it's like, so, you know, we're super serious, and then suddenly, as soon as the action sequences start and the Ski-Doos come out of the water, the Yakety Sax theme starts playing, and you're just like, okay, we're done. It's ridiculous. And it's not even ridiculous in a funny way. It's just like, what the fuck is this even?
Paul, you had a hand.
The choreography needed more fight and less choreography.
Yes.
Yeah. The one thing in that opening, in that early attack on the Atoll that really annoyed me was the whole... The gunner being led just firing blindly and then blows up the ship that has Dennis Hopper on it. That's so Dennis Hopper can be stopped. But he's just so stupid. He never stops shooting the gun even though he can't see.
Oh my god, that scene is hilarious though.
But it's so
stupid. With them yelling, Chuck! Chuck! No, yeah. Wait, is it Charles? Is it actually Charles?
No,
oh my god.
They're not yelling. They're like hilarious. Slightly raising their voices while he's shooting off an anti-aircraft gun.
Not to mention, I thought of those poor two boys.
So
the Seymour Flag guys who wind up getting killed because of this absolutely stupid, comedic violence. Yeah, it's just like,
The Ninja Flag guy who was doing the same motion over and over.
Yeah.
Which didn't seem to have any meaning other than blow shit up.
Well, yeah, them. I mean, they don't attack anybody. They're guiltless, and they wind up getting the boat shot up from under them and blown up for no reason. I mean, Dennis Hopper loses an eye, but they lose their lives. No one else seems to survive that conflagration. That conflagration makes absolutely no sense to have occurred. Yeah. I'm just going to fire the gun and not stop for anything, even though I can't see through my goggles. What the hell is that? There's not a limitless amount of ammunition in Waterworld.
Yeah. Julie,
yes,
you had a hand.
There is.
Bullet farm.
I did have a comment, and this is, again, to talk about what Sean was talking about with comparing this especially to just having seen Mad Max Fury Road right before it, and noting, like what Mike noted when he talked about how the action tells the story, and it's very clear all throughout Mad Max, when action sequence happens, you know what's happening, you know who's doing what and why, and you know, like, there's tension, you feel it, you want something to happen for Max and Furiosa and the wives, and you don't want the other people to succeed, and you know what they're doing and why they're trying, and you see when they get ideas and why they try them. And in this, it was just sort of like, well, we're going to show you some stunts, and it's kind of free-for-all chaos, and these people are really dumb, and nobody really has a reason to be doing any of this, and good luck figuring that out. So it fails at storytelling, and that made me sad, because I would have really liked to enjoy a really good water stunt show story, but there was no story there, and it was just, argh.
Yeah, fair. That's all fair, Julia. Yeah.
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 Yeah. All right, and now it's time to get to our grades, which may make Jen very sad.
Oh, I know exactly how you're all grading it. Don't worry.
You have no idea what's coming.
I mean, this is the crew that gives Sons of Steel A's, so obviously you'll be giving it F's.
Nah.
All right.
Who's first?
It's Julia. Julia starts first. Your grade, final things you want to say, and get out of here.
I'm going to give it an F+. It's not as bad as Transformers. I would always watch it again more than Transformers. It also didn't give me a migraine. So, you know, there are those positives for it.
Oh my god. F+ it is. Rachel.
I think probably because I've been unduly influenced by my fond memories of marching band, I actually just want to give it a sort of C- because it was crap. It wasn't that crap. It was kind of eh. You know, there are still plenty of other movies that we've watched for torture cinema that I would rather watch Waterworld again and, you know, see Kevin Costner be Grumpy Cat, except less charming.
What movie would you rather watch that we've done for torture instead of this film?
Every single
I'd rather watch Plan 9 from Outer Space than this one. But, fair like, enough. Say, you know, if you gave me a choice between Waterworld and Mac and Me, I'd totally watch Waterworld because the characters in Waterworld were mostly more charming than the ones in Mac and Me because Mac and Me aliens were apparently made out of smeat. So there you go.
that
meant they were probably delicious. All right, Paul, what about you?
This movie isn't as bad as some of the movies we've seen, so I am going to give it a D+.
Jen is probably very surprised right now.
No, not at all.
Not you just said we're gonna all get it F's.
I was kidding.
You just no
Holy
no
crap.
Trust.
Just because you hate the movie doesn't mean you're gonna give it an F. Well, it means you're gonna give it an F, but
well, just because you said that, I might give it an F-.
As is Rachel. Paul and Rachel, sensible people.
Oh, okay, you're right, okay.
Paul and Rachel just really, really fucking hated Mac and Me.
Exactly! Yes. There are so many other things in this world to hate way more than Waterworld. Just
yes,
saying.
That is unfortunately very true, Jen.
Okay,
so.
Well, as
a
you
sad
said.
Statement on humanity.
All right. Jeffrey, what about you?
Well, I think maybe that the reason Kevin's mind went to the possibility of life on Mars is that this film was a saddening bore. But, other things have hurt much worse. I'll give it a C-.
God, you guys are way too nice to this damn movie. All right. Jen.
Suck it, Sean.
I won't suck it. This world is full of pee water. It's not happening.
Since I don't have 6 minutes to do this, I just want to frame this movie in the context of it looks amazing. I'm sorry. I know it's horrible. The narration, the plot is terrible. The acting is terrible. But what really makes me fall in love with this movie, and I know you guys don't like the action sequences because they're ridiculous, but that's why I fucking love the action sequences. The production design on this film is absolutely fantastic. The details are amazing, and yes, the smokers, ridiculous. Everything is ridiculous. Let's just, like, put that out of the water, okay? Totally ridiculous. It's absurd they have cigarettes. It's absurd they even have oil. It's absurd that the Exxon Valdez is even there. But the details, the look is fantastic. The Rube Goldberg machine that is the Trimaran, gorgeous. The fact that they even, like, made the Skidoos up to look post-apocalyptic. Ah, I loved it! It's just fun. It's absurd and ridiculous fun from the picture of the captain of the Valdez on the wall that they call a saint to the ridiculous ski boots that the Mariner picks up at some point that are crazy, and Kim Coates, oh my god, Kim Coates as the best insane person to ever grace a film. I'm giving it a B. There you go.
I just want one comment, Jen, which is that you were so proud of yourself when you made that water pun.
I totally didn't even realize I made a water pun until I was like, oh, and then wait, you that were was like, a water pun.
You're so proud. That little that's proud why, laugh at the end.
That's why puns are funny.
Okay, well, I don't like this movie. I would rather watch Mac and Me 10 times before I watch this movie ever again. And the fact that Jen likes it and has mentioned it, I think, in every episode of Torture Cinema that she's been in requires
and
me
and will to, for the rest of time.
Yeah, and that for that reason, I have to give it an F minus.
Of course you will.
Because Jen will mention this damn movie in every single thing, which will require me to mention Sons of Steel.
Every time.
Every time.
Exactly.
So here's
we all
the thing.
Have to have our counterpoints.
I think I probably would watch Mac and Me again before I would watch Waterworld again. I think they're both equally bad, but I think I'd probably prefer to see that kid doing awesome wheelchair stunts more than this.
Mm. Right, because he's a badass.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
But I do agree with Jen that the production design was pretty sweet on this one.
Yeah. It's true. We average out to a D+.
Nice. Well, there we go. For you, Jen, I'm going to learn songs from Sons of Steel, and I'm going to sing them now.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how much.
While pouring sour milk on myself. For you.
I'm going to make a contraption that turns my pee into water and then send it to you.
Are you just going to send him the water or are you going to send him the raw materials?
The pee.
I'm just going to be honest. From this point on...
You don't
on,
even have to make a machine.
No, yeah. It's really... I'm just going to send him bottles of my pee.
Yeah, it's a little unnecessarily convoluted. I'll invent the machine to
so
make
is
the pee.
Pretty much everything in Waterworld, but it's hilariously awesome.
I will never
and
accept water
it was so
from
much fun
again.
To watch the first time in theaters. I'm sorry.
You're just ridiculous. At least it wasn't like Dungeons & Dragons where you were, like, angry and pregnant.
Oh my god, so angry. I have so much anger over that movie, it's not even funny. That thing destroyed my childhood.
And we've already done that film.
Yes, we have.
Right. So as Paul said, right, it was a D+ average?
Yep.
Fair enough. It's not as bad. Well, fair. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us. Really quick before we close out, Jeffrey runs some sort of podcast thing that he might want to mention for folks, which I listen to and people should listen to. But, Jeffrey, why don't you tell us about your podcast?
Sure. It's... The gentleman whose recordings I played in lieu of my own likes and dislikes does a 20 to 30 minute podcast about his theories about conspiracies and aliens and cryptozoology every 2 weeks, more or less. And I put it up on the website. It's go to doorwaytothehiddenworld.com, all one word, if you're interested.
And I think it's relevant to say in this Torture Cinema podcast that recently one of the episodes was about Adam Sandler and Adam Sandler's movies, and fans of Torture Cinema might especially like to listen to that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And there's also an episode earlier, like episode 19 or something, where he actually talked about the Omega Man.
And, oh, yeah. Yeah.
And about corpses and the use of corpses in a Mega Man. Yeah.
Right. That was in response to questions from this very podcast.
Yeah. It's really important. Kevin does good work. You know, so.
He frightens me, but he does good work.
Well, you know, part of the fear of his character is that he's never in the same place twice.
Yeah, and yet those sponsors keep finding him.
Really,
I don't know what to
sponsors.
Make of it. Really creepy sponsors.
Yep, so Doorway to the Hidden World, go check it out. I really love that show, and I thank Julia for pointing it out to me, by the way.
Yeah.
So thanks, Julia. It's a blast. So, and thanks very much, Jeffrey, for being our guest.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm a longtime listener, so...
Oh, excellent, excellent. And I know you have you've watched many movies with Julia while she had to talk about it and suffer.
That's true.
Yeah.
I have shared some of the suffering.
It's about time you had a place to vent. Perfect. Well, folks, if you've got any comments, you can leave it on our website. All the little details will be at the end of the episode. So on that note, we're done. So awkward ending. And scene.
And scene.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you, always.
This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo, signing off.